viewpoints expressed on The Edge are not necessarily those of this radio station, its staff, management, or other sponsors.
It's time for The Edge Radio Broadcast with your host, Daniel Lai. You can join Daniel and his guests as we discover the truth together. Within the continental U.S., call toll-free 1-800-996-9638 or locally here in Indiana, 359-5593. That's toll-free 1-800-996-9638 or locally at 359-5593. You can find out more about our guests and topics by logging on to The Edge's website, theedgeam.com. That's theedgeam.com. And now here's your host for The Edge Radio Broadcast. Here's Daniel Ott.
And welcome back to The Edge Radio Broadcast. My name is Daniel Ott. Now let's go to our newsmaker line and see if we have Dr. Corsi on the line. Doctor, are you with us?
I'm all set. I'm right here. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Corsi. Well, welcome to the program. You know, just before you got on the, just before you called in here, we're talking about using the internet as a possibility of a tool, a sort of a meeting place where maybe people can get back to some sort of freedom that we originally, or the human condition had at least experienced somewhere in the world at different times of the civilizations. Is it, you think it's ever possible that, and we'll get into your topics tonight, but do you think it's ever possible that we can stop the careening course to a total police world state?
Well, I think we have to fight that way, and I think we have to be determined that we will stop it. And the internet clearly is a major tool in the ability to communicate and the ability to get these messages across. So I'm very pleased to be with you tonight. And I think these are important broadcasts that can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. Well, thank you very much for coming on the program. And, you know, I was just doing a casual net search on you, and I guess you have some detractors out there. And I guess any time you take a stand for truth or what you believe is the truth, you're going to get needled. You're going to get websites produced against you. Does it ever get closer to you than just, say, websites? Is there anything that has happened to you as a result of some of the articles that you've posted?
Well, I mean, I get criticism. I think criticism's been the most I get. I mean, I'm sure people have, you know, tried to block me during doing various things of various kinds that I might not even be aware of. But mostly you get criticism, and you have to understand, I've always understood that when you speak out publicly, when you take a position, that's just part of the price you pay. It's part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people criticize me, I look hard to see what their substance is, where they're coming from. And if it's simply political criticism because they disagree with me and they want to call me names, well, I figure that's fairly transparent and reflects bad upon them.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to answer the substance of arguments rather than get into, you know, ad hominem or personal attacks. I try to avoid it as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, tonight we want to talk about, at least in the first hour, and we'll see where it goes, but we want to talk about this proposed superhighway coming up through, where's it actually originally? Is it Mexico? Is it south, further south? Where's its origination and where's its destination?
Well, the proposal for the it's Trans-Texas Corridor. It's a highway that's going to be built in Texas. If you take a look at the Texas Department of Commerce website, and the website is keeptexasmoving.com, keeptexasmoving.com, what you'll see is there's a plan to build a 4 football fields wide highway, superhighway, coming from Laredo, Texas. It's going to go up through the heart of Texas, bypassing, going around Austin and around Dallas, all the way to the border with Oklahoma, south of Oklahoma City. And the highway is going to connect down to ports, Mexican ports on the Pacific, like Lazaro Cardenas and Manzanilla. Now, these ports are where the plan is to bring in the super container tankers. Today, tankers carry about 4,500 containers. Well, they're planning to build a new generation of cargo ships that will hold as many as 12,500 containers. And these will be containers coming from China with cheap Chinese goods. Now the idea is, you know, the manufacturing in the United States will be moved increasingly to China, as it's already being done. And the idea is that these superhighways will be designed to transport all of the containers coming in to these ports like Lázaro Cárdenas cheaper. Mexican trucks and corridors that contain, you know, separate routes for trucks, and the trucks will carry the containers. So the whole plan, if you take a look at the Kansas City Smart Port, there's even a chart and diagram in one of the brochures on the website, I reference it frequently, that shows the trade routes coming from China, Far East, through Lázaro Cárdenas, up through Laredo, Texas, in through the Trans-Texas Corridor, into the heart of the United States and Kansas City, where there will be a Mexican customs office. And that's what the NAFTA Superhighway is really all about, this Trans-Texas Corridor.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this just one step in the combining of the currencies of the three continents?
Well, I think, yeah, I think what's going on through the Security and Prosperity Partnership, see, if you track this back, it starts with the Security and Prosperity Partnership declared in Waco, Texas, in March 23, 2005, at a summit meeting with Vincente Fox, and then Prime Minister of Canada, who was Paul Martin. And the three leaders, George Bush, declared, well, now we're in the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America. And so the plan is to take NAFTA, which is basically a trade agreement, and to advance it towards a North American community, and ultimately a North American Union, very much the same way that in Europe, what started out as a coal and steel agreement 50 years ago, 1957, advanced to be a European community, and has now ended up being a full-fledged European Union, complete with its own currency, the euro. And if we go the same route, we'll end up as a North American community, and then the next step will be a North American Union, and ultimately we'll have our own currency, the Amero.
Mm-hmm. What about the rabble-rousing people that still have guns in their pickup trucks and that, you know, all very in different places of the United States? What's going to convince them to join this union?
Well, I think, Dan, you know, what happened in Europe, you got to remember the counterpart in Europe was certainly the French and the French under de Gaulle, the Germans back even under Adenauer, who did not want to give up their national sovereignty. I mean, that was farthest from their mind. But one step at a time, I mean, this incremental approach has a lot of power because, well, first you've got a coal and steel agreement or a NAFTA agreement, and then, well, there's disagreement. So you need to go to the next level. You need to have NAFTA, Chapter 11 tribunals, which can today resolve disputes and overturn U.S. laws in favor of a NAFTA investor. One by one, these institutions get put into place. And so now today in Texas, when this highway is going to be built, Texas plans to use a quick form of their eminent domain where if somebody does not accept within 90 days the offer of the state to take their property for this new highway, mm-hmm. the state can just do it and pay them the low price they've offered them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the guns and the, you know, pickup trucks and the objections go by the way when the state and the countries proceed with such determination to enact global mechanisms.
Hmm. Well, it seems to me that Texas has always been a sort of a freer type of state, you know, more resistant to government rules and more open land and, you know, more resistors to any type of thing. It just seems to me there might be some sort of resistance, including armed resistance to that. But I think what the way that most things change the behavior of the people or the laws is it's just kind of an incrementalism to where, you know, it's going to be built, of course, as, you know, economics. It's always about economics, jobs and economics, and people believe that in the beginning and they buy into that bill of goods. But I still think there's going to be some sort of resistance there. Do you think that as some have speculated in other times gone by, that UN troops would be involved to put down this sort of uprising, or you think that it won't happen at all?
Well, it's hard. You know, first of all, I agree that the incrementalism is the approach they're trying. I mean, the analogy I use, it's like the little green frog, which people, I'm sure, have heard. And that is, you know, if you put a frog in a pot of water and you turn on the heat in the stove, gradually the water gets hotter and the frog will probably boil to death, not really ever realizing, you know, step by step, the water is getting warmer, the frog gets sleepier, the frog just boils to death. Take the same frog and drop it into a pot of boiling water on the stove, frog would jump out. So that's the power of incrementalism. Now, you know, I would never advocate that people get violent or armed revolution. I don't think any of that's necessary right now. And we can resist this without those kind of extreme measures. But the people in Texas have already, for instance, they passed a moratorium. The legislature passed a two-year moratorium in the Trans-Texas Corridor. They don't want Cintra, which is an investment consortium in Spain, financing the highway and then collecting the tolls, which is what Spain plans to do. You know, if you're going to drive on this highway from Austin to San Antonio to Austin or to Dallas, you're going to pay Spain for the pleasure to do so. That moratorium was passed by the legislature, so there's an act of resistance. But yet the Federal Highway Administration writes a letter, and they tell Texas, well, if you have this moratorium, you're going to lose federal highway funds. And it comes to the governor, and Governor Perry vetoes the moratorium. So, you know, this resistance is a long process, and it's just beginning in Texas as people realize the road's going to be built. That's going to be financed by Cintra in Spain. It's going to be four football fields wide. That's going to take their property. So we're at the very first stages here, Dan, of seeing the resistance is going to happen. I think the resistance will be significant, but I don't think it has to go to the point of revolution to stop it.
Mm-hmm. What about that Thomas Jefferson said that a free society requires a shedding of blood every 25 years? In this country, we've really not had any shedding of blood for people to fight for their freedom that they used to experience in this country. So I think, worst case, people put a bumper sticker on their car. That's about the most resistance I see on any issue, really.
Well, I mean, we had the Civil War, and that certainly was a resistance. And we've had various forms of resistance. I mean, people would argue the Civil Rights Movement was a form of resistance in order to get rights acknowledged. And I think that I don't think this North American Union or the NAFTA superhighways are going to be built without people objecting to it. But we're before we get to armed resistance, I mean, which I think is a long way away, and you know, I'm nowhere near beginning even to think about ever advocating anything like that. We've got elections, we've got the process of democratic change, we've got free speech and the right to object to it. We're making an impact just, you know, by the people who are writing about it, expressing the interest, shows like yours. I don't know that this plan will get put into effect as quickly or as rapidly as the elites who are planning on it want it to happen. And if we keep resisting it, I think we can change mm-hmm. the course of the North American Union from happening. Equally as I think if in Europe people organized and resisted it early on, they could have blocked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think Europeans in general have been turned into a docile civilization over there. But and I would think, and that's not to put them down, because America is well on the way. You know, we're heading the exact same type of society that they have now. But I think that freedom-minded people around the world really may be rooting for someone to resist something. For instance, I'm rooting for Quebec. I'd like to see Quebec succeed from Canada. I understand that England is resisting. I don't know whether the metric system or what. I forgot what I just read in a blog the other day. They're resisting something, some measurement of universality between the countries, and you know, and so that's good. And then, so different spots, you know, even I don't know, was Venezuela, one of those countries said they're going to back out of the UN and take over all the oil wells, and they're going to do what they want. So really, I'm rooting for anyone or any country that resists what the world's pressure is trying to put on them. You know, unless they're, you know, saying we're going to arm with nukes and kill everybody. In that case, I think so. But, you know, I think there are still people around the world that are hoping Americans will get back to what Americans used to be, is much more free than what they are now. Because, you know, you say that, you know, we're not at a point of revolution now, but, you know, as incrementally as things happen, we don't even know what we have lost, because we think we still have it. But in fact, you said we had freedom of this, freedom of speech. Well, no, you don't. Don Imus found that out, and several other people found that out, and senators find that out. And you can't, you know, there is a system that's in place. As soon as you speak up, they're going to wrap you good. So I got to disagree with you on the freedom of speech, at least.
Well, certainly I've been able to speak out and write and get across my points, and I continue to be able to do so, and I'm grateful for the Internet, WorldNet Daily, where I continue to write. I'm planning to continue to speak and write out on these subjects. Now, there's a lot of resistance around. I mean, England never did go to the euro. It's still on the pound sterling. I think now that France has a new conservative government, which was a shock to the elitists around the world, the globalists, I'm hearing now that France intends to pull out of Airbus. If they do, that'll be a major European global boondoggle supported by tax, you know, benefits and dodges of all kinds. If France pulls out of Airbus and Airbus fails, this will be a major blow to the European Union. The European Union does not yet have a constitution. It was resisted in the last round. I mean, I think the European Union could yet break up. And I would support those countries, now France with a conservative government, that are moving in that direction. I could see a day when the European Union was declared a failed experiment and countries withdrew from it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these things are going to take some time. And the first issue is what we're doing tonight in the radio show and in the writing I've been doing, and that is getting people really aware of the issues that are going on and how important they are to the future of U.S. sovereignty and to the nature of the freedom that we and our children and our mm-hmm. grandchildren are going to experience.
Mm-hmm. And I also got to say, challenge the idea. Of course, I brought it up my own self, so I'm challenging my own statement about the incremental changes. Well, 9/11 came around, and in that time frame, dozens of laws and a lot of rights were lost almost instantaneously. But I'm wondering, could you foresee or imagine any event in the United States that would be the catalyst to accelerate this major superhighway coming through America?
Well, just to even to go to the, you know, the changes that can occur by crisis, I've written a series of things. I wrote an article, Robert Pastor, who's at American University, who is, you know, in many ways the intellectual father of this North American community idea, which I say is on the road to a North American Union. Robert Pastor gave a Spanish interview in which he said another 9/11 might be what's needed to push us along the road towards North American integration. Pastor was lamenting that George Bush is bogged down in Iraq, that Calderon has just won an election in Mexico but is strongly opposed from the left, and the election was very close and very contentious, and that the government in Canada is yet a minority government with difficulty to rule with a free hand. So Pastor was saying, well, if another crisis comes along, maybe we can advance the path of North American integration. Well, I think that's very frightening thinking, but yet it's out there, and the elites are aware of the value of a crisis to move along an agenda that otherwise the American people or the people of Mexico and Canada would never accept.
Mm-hmm. By the way, for those of you joining us late here, we're talking with Dr. Jerome Corsi. He's a staff writer for WorldNet Daily and has been author of many books and, of course, co-author of many other books, some of which we have listed on the website in the bio section. Dr. Corsi, this proposed superhighway, you said it's basically going to have outside funding, but as that thing starts to come through and people's land starts to begin to be taken, do you see that? Is there a possibility that as it's being built, there will be a stop? And as you mentioned, talk about a failed experiment, that there will be so many rules and regulations that would have to be rewritten. I can't even imagine the amount of laws and little town edicts that have to be overruled. That'd be like putting your hand in a beehive, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, to get this Trans-Texas Corridor in place, the first thing Texas did, and they've been at it for years, is rewriting their state laws to make it possible for a foreign entity like Cintra, which is a investment consortium in Spain, to finance the Trans-Texas Corridor and then have the leasing rights to it for 50 or 75 or 90 years, whatever the laws or the contract will call for. That leasing rights will be owned by Cintra, and you'll be paying Cintra a toll to drive along the highway. So the law changes have been going on for a long time. In fact, there's a website in the Federal Highway Administration, a PPP, which is the Personal Private Partnerships, and that's what this center involvement is. It's a private company forming a public partnership with the Texas Department of Transportation to finance and own this road. At least own it in the sense of owning the tolls on it. The road technically will still be owned by Texas, but it'll be operated and managed by Central, with the tolls going to Central. The states have already begun modifying their laws. The Federal Highway Administration's been holding conferences teaching states how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a massive effort underway in the Bush administration to allow and encourage states to develop new highways and lease their existing highways through using foreign investment consortium, on which the investment bankers make millions of dollars of fees.
Mm-hmm. Well, for those people that don't believe that what Dr. Corsi says could happen, I've got to say, and I don't know if you've researched it, Doctor, but here in Indiana, we've already give them a highway. You talk about Sentra. It's, of course, a Spanish-Australian consortium. I think they also run the Chicago Skyway. Well, they paid the state of Indiana $3.85 billion to run or to have a 75-year lease on an Indiana toll road. So Sentra's already out there. I don't know what they're doing up here. Perhaps that toll road was maybe connected to this labyrinth of roads, but they're already in this country buying up roads.
Well, there's no question about it. In fact, if you look at the Federal Highway Administration's website, you'll see that Federal Highway Administration's got several projects going. These PPPs, I've written about it extensively, public-private partnerships, where companies like Sintra, and by the way, Giuliani's law firm in Houston, Bracewell and Giuliani, represented Sintra, not only for the Trans-Texas Corridor, but also several of the other projects Sintra's involved with, including the Indiana Toll Road. You know, you find the involvement of Sintra and of Giuliani's law firm as their legal advisors penetrates the whole plan. There's huge amounts of fees that law firms and investment bankers are going to make converting our free freeways, our public roads today, into either new or reconfigured or redeveloped super highways, all largely NAFTA-oriented super highways, the Foreign Investment Consortium will fund and own the leasing rights on. We'll be paying foreign groups to ride highways in the United States, as remarkable as that sounds. So this has been underway, it's going on, and I quoted last week Robert Poole, who's head of one of the think tanks. He's scheduled to speak on June 13th in Oklahoma on these PPPs. There's $25 billion worth of projects under contemplation by foreign entities to own the leasing rights to either new or existing interstates or other comparable roads throughout the United States. I mean, that's a huge figure.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Corsi, we have this question. We have numbers of questions here, and we'll weave them into our conversation. And as you know, the format here is that our listeners worldwide just email questions to the show as they're listening to our conversation. We have this here. Dr. Corsi, are the new highways going to be pre-fitted with explosives like the World Trade Centers in case the Chinese military uses it to invade? I want to stop right there and say, Doctor, that type of question, you really have to rather than be that shocked, you should be wondering how somebody could come up with that question like that, in people's minds, there's a whole lot more going on, and they would even suggest that could happen, which shows where the disconnect between what the government says and what people believe is very, and there's a vast gulf between the two. But would you like to answer that question?
Well, sure, Dan. I mean, and by the way, it doesn't surprise me. Writing for WorldNet Daily, and my email's out there. It's jcorsi, J-C-O-R-S-I, and WorldNet Daily at worldnetdaily.com. jcorsi@worldnetdaily.com. I'm happy for the listeners to email me at any time. I tend to get so many I can't answer them all individually, but I do read every one. I must get 5 to 10 questions a day on the World Trade Centers being blown up by the government, and the concern over these NAFTA superhighways. Now, first of all, probably on the World Trade Center issue. I mean, I'm an investigative reporter, and I tend to write only those things that I've got absolute definitive proof of. There's very interesting questions on the World Trade Centers raised by circumstantial arguments, and I'm very interested in them, but I'm not ready to take a position on it. They don't consider yet the proof definitive.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I'm too concerned about the Chinese, not that they're going to put explosives in the superhighway, but we let China, through Hutchison Whampoa, manage both ends of the Panama Canal, which is also going to be deepened so these super tankers can use ports like Houston and New Orleans for similar trade routes, with reconfiguring our highways, going north to south, up from Houston into the country, I-69, and up from New Orleans, and also up I-95 from Miami. And Hutchison Whampoa will manage both ends of the Panama Canal. Hutchison Whampoa manages right now Lazaro Cardenas and Manzanilla. You know, it's not inconceivable to me, with as dependent as we are on China, even for trade, our imbalances, $1 trillion with a P, foreign exchange reserves held in dollars or dollar asset currencies by China, from our foreign exchange imbalances, our foreign trade imbalances with China. China could just as well someday decide to run gunboats up the Mississippi, and I'm not sure what we would do to stop them.
Yeah.
I'm very seriously concerned about China,
and
independent of these world trade questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in fact, just this week, I think the Pentagon released reports saying that they are just not alarmed, but they just want to put out a report that they are aware of a Chinese military buildup. And of course, China immediately responded and said, "We reiterate, we will maintain a non-first strike strategy." So the buildup of it's crazy. It seems like every one of America's enemies have something to do with our own money coming back to us in bombs.
Well, running these NAFTA agreements and world trade agreements, which are not free trade agreements, certainly not fair trade agreements. They're not classic free trade agreements where everything's equal between the trading partners. Most of these agreements are to our decided disadvantage. And with China having this $1 trillion in foreign exchange reserves held in U.S. currency, China's been putting a lot of that towards developing a military. And I don't think we can trust China as our friend long term. Mm-hmm. China just had submarines that were caught stalking the Kitty Hawk, which is a ballistic submarine that we have in a forward deployment position outside of Japan on a permanent basis.
Mm-hmm.
That's fairly frightening. And
yeah.
China's developing and testing long-term missiles with, ultimately the potential to hit the United States easily with a intercontinental ballistic missile.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to be extremely concerned about China. I think it's foolish to have these trade agreements assuming that China's just our best buddy. They're not.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems that every agreement the United States makes, somehow or another, sovereignty or entanglements with foreign nations, it just mounts up, and the original intent of the founding fathers of the United States, it just out the door. It's like they had no wisdom at all. But do you think that being the case, or not being the case, however you view that, isn't it just good business to have free trade with all these countries, just say?
Well, first of all, I think our founding fathers were legitimately concerned about American sovereignty and issues with regards to American sovereignty, and I very strongly identified with a constitutional position, because I think that this is the defense of our liberties in the future depends upon us maintaining and adhering to the Constitution. We start looking at this as an outmoded, archaic doctrine. We're going to lose the institutions that document was created to protect. Now, in terms of our free trade agreements, our free trade agreements are not classical free trade agreements. They're not fair trade agreements. You know, the multinational corporations, Microsoft, Bill Gates is happy to employ the next generation of his computer specialists out of China because they're cheaper, or out of India. actually, you know, more recruiting out of India than anywhere else. Even though we've got computer science graduates coming out of our college, Bill Gates doesn't feel any compunction to use our computer science trained specialists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, China, we have, China has a currency that they subsidize, so that's not fair. They use slaves or near slaves. Slaves, I seriously mean political prisoners,
mm-hmm.
In concentration camp environments who are making goods for the U.S. market and not being paid at all.
Mm-hmm.
Workers who are being paid minimum.
Okay, are they still killing baby girls?
Well, they're doing, I mean, that's still in debate. I continue to read stories that China's got this one-child policy and that they're imposing, you know, very strict and radical means to make sure that families don't have more than one child or women children, girls children. I mean, they were killing babies. That's certainly what I've seen and read reports on.
Mm-hmm.
They are still killing political prisoners for their organs and selling their organs.
Whoa.
All these measures, using slaves, their currency, the value-added tax differential. If you export goods from China, they reimburse the value-added tax. If we send our goods to China for import, they add a value-added tax.
Mm-hmm.
These are not fair trade. We can't engage in agreements like this that sell out U.S. workers left and right just because it might benefit Bill Gates or some other multinational corporation.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, in your book that you've recently co-authored with Michael Evans, Showdown with Nuclear in Iran, I mean, I guess we could use China too, is this trade interaction, is it bringing information to, say, the masses of people, not the government, but the individual people? It's been, you know, I always hear about the young people in Iran, you know, maybe liking Western things. Is the Western philosophy coming through to them in spite of the government efforts to block it? And do you think they're actually understanding that America is not their enemy?
Well, I think increasingly, I mean, certainly, China's very, I mean, Iran's a very young country. So many of the older adults, especially the male adults in Iran, were killed in the eight-year war in the 1980s between Iran and Iraq. So after that war, Ayatollah Khomeini encouraged families to have more children, which they did. And now these young people are, you know, the majority of the population of Iran. And despite the prohibitions and the viciousness and the suppression of freedom by the mullahs who control Iran, the religious clerics, the youth in Iran are tied in to, you know, Western information, Western music, Western culture, Western TV. I mean, they, to the extent they can get it, they find it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
The youth of Iran do not want to be repressed, especially the women. I mean, this is still a vicious repression.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this regime, the Ahmadinejad regime in Iran, is only in power by maintaining violence over the dissidents, including the student dissidents, and putting increasing numbers in prison because they speak out.
Mm-hmm.
I think this regime is really an unstable regime. I think you could see a move for freedom from within Iran that would change the regime.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they watch Oprah over there, they have some sort of software that superimposes a headscarf on Oprah as she's talking, you know, to keep up with
I don't think they get Oprah and Iran to the extent I don't know that.
Well, that's the way we could torture them into submission, but I'm just wondering, maybe
they're very well aware of Western culture and Western values, and periodically you get, in fact, there's one going on right now, another repression in Iran, because the women they modernize their headscarves, or they don't wear, you know, Islamic dress to the satisfaction of the mullahs.
Yeah.
The mullahs act as if they're scared to death of women.
Yeah, well, we know that somebody over there is watching American TV, because the Palestinians have a Mickey Mouse telling kids to strap bombs on and go kill a Jew. So, we know they are getting some of our Western culture over there.
Well, through the Internet, much of it's available that way, too. I mean, it's very hard to keep world culture out of these countries, even with repression. And they do follow Western TV, Western music, Western movies. Somehow or other, they get the information.
Yeah. As this information does go over there, do you think that there's going to be a tilting of power where the governments, the controlling governments, see that either they strike out with a war against the West or they're going to lose their grip of power? You think there's going to be some point where there's going to be they're going to have to make a decision?
Well, there is that tension. I mean, it does force regimes over there, like the Ahmadinejad regime. I do worry about the issue that Ahmadinejad may use a war as one of the ways of increasing his power over a population that's unhappy, because he's not kept his campaign promise to share the oil wealth with the average person in Iran. It hasn't happened. The economics right now in Iran could not be worse. Probably an 18 to 20% inflation, probably 30% unemployment, drug problems among the youth, family so poor they still have to sell a child into sex slavery so the other children can eat. I mean, it's a terrible regime, and it imposes a standard of living upon the people, which is brutal. And, you know, I do think we could see peaceful change in Iran if we supported those forces in Iran that want to change their own country from within.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very opposed to us going to war with Iran, because I think it'll only make things worse.
Well, I imagine any kind of additional war is going to make everything worse. And we have this question here for you, Dr. Corsi. This person evidently has done a lot of research. It says, Dr. Corsi, my understanding is that Bush and the president of Iran are working together through the Illuminati and Skull and Bones to bring about this nuclear war. What do you think about that? Is George Bush in collusion to bring down the United States or to fabricate a war, to instigate a war of any kind?
Well, I don't think we have to go to that kind of a theory to be opposed to George Bush and his policy on Iran. I mean, I've been writing that just having these two aircraft carriers, the Stennis, the second one just joined the Stennis recently, the Nimitz, Stennis and the Nimitz,
mm-hmm. All right.
And they're with the Bonhomme Richard, which is a expeditionary strike force. They're 150 miles off of Iran, and they're running war games. I mean, these are provocative actions, and I think Bush probably would look at an expanded war in Iran, maybe even as helping him domestically at home. They've written and been very concerned about that, and written to say that Bush in general wants to expand the war in the Middle East as a way to resolve or get out of the situation in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I think these are all failed policies, and I would hope that Bush is not pursuing them, because the idea of more war in the Middle East is only going to be more disaster. And whether people think the Illuminati or whatever is behind it, I still think that, you know, no group is going to win, Illuminati if they exist included. I mean, even the most extreme conspiracy theorists, you don't have to go to that extent to say that what George Bush is doing is a provocative policy and is not aimed at using all the options we could use to get peaceful change.
Mm-hmm.
We overturned apartheid in South Africa without a war. We don't need to be on the doorstep of Iran acting as if we're ready to go to war. I know, like taking a stick and trying to poke it in the nose of a bear. I think this current strategy is a very poor policy by the Bush administration. I wish we'd quit it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just don't see a lot of support for George Bush left or right these days. And that brings us, of course, we're getting closer to the election. Who do you foresee might be the next president?
Well, I don't see any of these candidates. And, you know, just in full disclosure, the Constitution Party has approached me with the National Veterans Coalition.
Really?
And they're asking if I'll run as their presidential candidate in the 2008 elections with the Constitution Party.
Mm-hmm.
And I am seriously considering it.
Really? And what percentage of the vote does the Constitution Party usually get?
Well, in the last election, they got less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, they're probably the third largest organized alternative party outside the Democrats and the Republicans. That they did poorly last time does not necessarily mean they'll do poorly this time. I think right now it's hard to tell the Democrats and the Republicans apart, especially in issues like immigration. They both, Democrats and Republicans, you know, with a Senator Kyle from Arizona and Senator Kennedy or Senator McCain, Republican, trying to craft this illegal immigration guest worker pardon amnesty program, into a new comprehensive immigration reform bill. I think the American people are mad at the Democrats and Republicans alike.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity is there in 2008 for a third party to emerge with a strong policy and argument that, you know, both traditional liberals and conservatives can see agreement with or
mm-hmm.
find reasons to support.
Mm-hmm.
Our politics are going through a shift, and the issues which typically or traditionally separated liberals from conservatives are not so clear anymore. And I think there are many people, both liberal and conservative, for instance, who are opposed to the tremendous amount of power that George Bush is trying to put usurp into the presidency, and that's become a bipartisan issue right there.
Hmm. And I, you know, like I think there, yes, there's definitely more dissatisfaction that I can see from both sides, and perhaps, you know, again, one of the mainstays of freedom, one of the things that that people are beginning to think that they should be able to be free, of course, is the internet, and they're finding out, as you said, that both parties are sort of in on it. I always believe that the Republicans want to do what the Democrats want to do, only they want to do it with a profit. But where would the Constitution Party stand on illegal immigration?
Well, I think we've got to build a fence. I mean, I've and the Constitution Party does too. We've got to do that and enforce our immigration laws. It's kind of like when somebody's hit by a car on the side of the road. And they're bleeding. You've got to stop the hemorrhaging before you can have an operation. Nobody's saying you can round up 11 million or 12 million. I think there's probably more like 20 or 30 million illegal immigrants here. I can't round them all up, but you can enforce our immigration laws and make it a lot less attractive for them to remain.
Mm-hmm.
You can also make sure we cut off social benefits, which the middle class cannot afford, to illegal immigrants and their families, so that we quit subsidizing their ability to take underclass wages, which undercut our own low-skilled workers and less educated workers.
Mm-hmm.
I think we first got to protect American workers. And when we do have immigration, I'm in favor of Hispanic immigration, but I want it to be under the rule of law. I'm
mm-hmm.
married to a woman who's born in Argentina, speaks Spanish. My wife and her mother, even before I was married to her, they were sponsoring families from El Salvador to come to the United States legally.
Mm-hmm.
We've continued to do that. I think that we need to have immigration just as we did, you know, 100 mm-hmm. or 200 years ago.
Yeah.
But we need to have it legally and according to the rule of law.
Well, do you think the Constitution Party, or maybe yourself, do you support changing the Constitution to where as soon as illegals come across the border, they start banging like rabbits, and all of a sudden they have access to the total amount of American benefits? Do you think they should change that?
Well, I don't think we need to change the Constitution. I think we just need to enforce the laws. I mean, you know, this idea that the 14th Amendment makes every child who is born here a citizen is not correct. That amendment has a clear history where diplomats have children. The child is considered to be a resident and a citizen of the country where the parents owe their allegiance. I think we can have the same in the United States. If a child is born to Mexican parents, I think that child is a Mexican citizen, not necessarily a U.S. citizen just because they were born on U.S. soil. We can stop the policy of, you know, demanding illegal immigrants that they can go into hospitals and use the hospitals as primary care facilities. We don't need to have the schools be forced to give bilingual education. These subsidies are going to ultimately bankrupt the middle class, close hospitals, and make it impossible for the schools in many parts of the country to function. So I think we do need to retrench those benefits and hold the line to say that these benefits were designed for U.S. citizens, not to subsidize an illegal immigrant invasion from Mexico.
Okay. I'll tell you what, Dr. Corsi, we need to go to commercial break, so just stay with us through the break, please.
I will. Thank you.
All right. All right, everybody, you're listening to The Edge radio broadcast. My name is Daniel, and on our newsmaker line tonight, we are honored to have with us Dr. Jerome Corsi, who's, of course, the staff writer for WorldNet Daily and has had numerous books published, and you can read more about those on The Edge website. This interview will be posted tomorrow in its entirety for you forever, and that is our gift to you. Freely we have received, freely we give. And if you have a guest suggestion, go to theedgeam.com website. You know we take it. Virtually every guest that's been on this program over the last 3 years have been suggested by you, our faithful listeners. If this program is not on your local radio in your area, you suggest them, tell them the radio program of The Edge is free for their taking. Now, if you are an advertiser, The Edge broadcast, of course, gets over 5.5 million hits per month and is rated very high now up on the, according to ranking.com, of Internet Talk Radio. So we have a significant audience. If you're an advertiser, you need to connect to a worldwide listening and intelligent free-thinking audience. My name is Daniel Ott. We'll be right back after the break.
People try always put me down because the things I say are not real smart. I got these guys to help me lead this nation. Talking about my the guys I work with. Oh, yeah, my administration, baby. We started off going into Afghanistan. We shifted the blame and put it on Hussein. The media perpetuates a terrorization. Hey, I said it. So we can pass draconian bad laws.
I want to know the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
You can get the truth
as we discover the truth together
on the Edge Radio program with your host, Daniel Ott.
Hello, everybody. Daniel Ott here for This Side of the Gate by John P. Johnston. If you believe in reincarnation, this is the book you've been waiting for. It all begins on the lost continent of Atlantis, where many of life's deepest mysteries are revealed to the reader. Get it now at select bookstores and online at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. This Side of the Gate by John P. Johnston. Get it now at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
I just really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. I've been looking at your website and reading what your fans and the people that come to your website write, and they're incredibly intelligent, incredibly leading edge. Talk about thinking out of the box. You guys are right at the center of it. I can't believe how much energy you command. It's just unbelievable. I'm a fan for life.
Hello, everybody. Do you have a message you want to get to the world? Do you have an aspiration to broadcast it live? Well, now you can through the Edge Broadcasting Network. EBN is now offering to you your own live broadcast server. This means that with just a microphone or connection from a mixing board, you can stream your program live up to 128 kilobits, that's CD quality, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can also stream your recorded audio tracks that are on your computer's hard drive or MP3 player. You can mix live and recorded audio. The Edge Broadcasting Network is making this available to you for only $99 per month. That's right, just $99 per month. Technology is advancing, so take advantage of this great opportunity by clicking on the Edge Broadcast Network link on the Edge's homepage or go to ebnlive.net. That's ebnlive.net for more information. Broadcasting the truth together on the Edge Broadcasting Network.
And now back to the hottest new show on radio. You're listening to The Edge with your host, Daniel Ott.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Edge Radio Broadcast. My name is Daniel Lott. Thank you, everyone, so much for logging on to the program, wherever you are. If you missed the exciting first hour, the in-depth conversation with Dr. Corsi, go to the edgeam.com website tomorrow. You know that the Edge spends all of its web streaming bandwidth for you, our fabulous listening audience. If you've got a question for Dr. Corsi, go to the edgeam.com website, click on Fast Blast to come right here to the studio. Get in line, as we have numbers of questions for him. Don't forget, next week we're going to have our guest list actually is up on the Edge's website now. You can go there. Next week we're going to be having Robert Baird, 2 weeks. Walter Bosley, 3 weeks. Bill Dankenbridge, 4 weeks. Steve Eswick. And on it goes as we bring the most fabulous guests we can find to you. This is Corsi the Edge. Now let's go back to our newsmaker line and bring Dr. Corsi back on. Doctor, welcome back.
Thanks, Daniel. Happy to be with you.
All right. Well, by the way, how's your books doing there?
Oh, my books have done well. Always. I've been very pleased with my success, and I thank people who have bought the books and read them and comments they've given me. I've got a new book that'll be out in July. It's called The Late Great USA. You can see it up on Amazon right now. It's in pre-sales. It'll be out in July, and it's on this North American Union, the merger of the United States, Canada, and Mexico that's underway under the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America. I examine it in detail, and I'm hopeful that book will do well also.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've got two words in that book title that have instant recognition with millions around the world, talking about the late great planet Earth. So just using those two words ought to get you some notice on those bookshelves.
Well, I think, you know, there's kind of similar thoughts here, and that is that if we don't protect the United States of America, if we do not respond to these threats to our sovereignty, these threats to move us in a direction that is going to basically, like Europe, evolve us into a European Union from a basic common market agreement like NAFTA, I think it's up to the people of the United States to, you know, hold on to our sovereignty, to be aware of these threats, and to speak out, as we're doing here in this show, to get people aware of the threat and to respond.
By the way, I want to get this shout out to Andy, our technical director, who is developing some excellent documentaries there. The newest one there is up on the website now, called The Monsanto Story, and there's a part one, so be looking for part two of his great video documentaries. In fact, Andy has produced the video trailer that we are now using for Dr. Corsi. Doctor, we have this question that come in, and we'll just try to run through several of them here real quick, and we'll get back to our conversation. Could you elaborate on any theories that may be regarding America's role in the end times, possibly one of the heads of the seven beasts? I think it's a biblical reference, talking about a seven-headed beast. Do you ever see a biblical coincidence with what's going on in America?
Well, I encourage people to understand, I was born a Roman Catholic, and I tend to die a Roman Catholic, and I'm not the expert that many people are on biblical prophecy. Now, when I wrote Atomic Iran, in fact, last summer I went on a prophecy tour that, and I speak on one of the evangelical groups sponsored, and I frequently appear on evangelical radio from many evangelical hosts who are into these end time predictions, many of whom see correspondence between things I'm writing about and what's predicted as they see it in the Bible, and I'm not opposed to that. I mean, I'm honored when those correspondences come up. I'm a strong Christian. I believe in the Bible. I believe in biblical prophecy. I'm just not the expert on it that many other people are.
All right.
But I will acknowledge that many people see links and correspondences between things that I write and what they see as biblical prophecies that occurred specifically around things I've written, mostly with Iran, where I see, you know, an alliance forming with Russia and China to oppose Iran. I get many emails about Ezekiel and the chapters in Ezekiel which talk about Gog and Magog and end times. Things I've written on one world government type thinking with the you know, North American Union forming out of the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America.
Yeah.
I get many emails on Revelation, showing me the various chapters and verses in Revelation in which, you know, end times discussion of one world government and various other aspects of one world government, mark of the beast, or you know, a number required to deal in commerce.
Right.
I'm aware of many of those correspondences. It's just that I'm not, I don't profess myself to be an expert on those subjects.
Okay, very good. Now, we have this question, and it's it looks like another type of frustration question. Why did George Bush declare himself a dictator?
Well, that's, you know, a very interesting question. I've been writing about this in WorldNet Daily, it is a frightening issue because as we've had this new recent national security and homeland security directives, which were signed by President Bush on May 9th, and I wrote about them last week, and I've been on a lot of media, the Washington Journal this week, and that interview is posted on Washington Journal. If you take a look at their website, you can see the Washington Journal hour I did. In fact, I think that was broadcast by Washington Journal and C-SPAN three times yesterday. And the directive that President Bush signed essentially says that he can declare himself, or the president can declare there's a national emergency that exists, and then the president takes over or has the ability to operate all levels of government down to the tribal, you know, federal, state, local, tribal, territorial governments, and even some private government operations, or private operations that are involved in infrastructure projects. And the definition of emergency is very broad. It can be any kind of emergency, environmental, health emergency, terrorist emergency, you name it. And this is the most broad definition of executive powers that I've seen in a continuity agreement coming out of the White House ever. And I kind of blew the whistle on it and said, we shouldn't let this just slip by. We've got to have a national debate on whether we really want the president to have these extreme powers on his own declaration that some kind of an emergency exists.
Well, these things are slipping by, and, you know, it's like the funding for the war. It just pretty much, you know, whatever he wants, you know, the hundreds of billions and the troops is pretty, you know, most of the edicts coming out of his office is just like, who's going to stop him? But, you know, I've been doing this broadcast long enough to know that there were threatenings and utterings concerning Bill Clinton saying, you know, that he was going to have a false flag operation, or, you know, he had presidential edicts that were going to keep him in office forever. So isn't that really just a straw man when people would contemplate the idea that he may at some point make himself a dictator?
Well, you know, Daniel, the problem is you don't know in advance. And I think it's legitimate, as we're concerned about the Constitution, not to see any president usurp power. We've had the presidents, going back to, you know, Abraham Lincoln, suspending habeas corpus in the Civil War. Presidents have very conveniently defined for themselves increasing powers, and regardless of whether those powers are in the Constitution or not. And I think that, you know, if you look back and you say, okay, George Bush has now got these new directives, you say, why are they out 6 years into his presidency? What's going on now that he knows about or is worried about that we don't know about? And do we really want to have these definitions of authority? You know, how about the balance of powers that's in the Constitution? Why not requirements that Congress get involved? Why not a revision or redefinition of the National Emergency Act, which exists and demands the president come to Congress with any declaration of an emergency. If that's not sufficient, let's get that act redefined rather than having the president just issue his own presidential directive and on his own authority without congressional review, making determinations that concentrate more power into his office in the case an emergency occurs.
Yeah. Or trumped up emergency. Hey,
You know, I mean, the problem, and why it's a legitimate concern, Daniel, is any student of history knows, going back to the ancient Roman Empire, that the councils, that were the heads of the state in ancient Rome, Republic, declared there was an emergency and that they needed to assume the powers of an emperor, and that's how Imperial Rome became Imperial Rome, with the council assuming dictatorial powers and appointing them in charge of everything. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the Founding Fathers knew that that was possible. Founding Fathers wanted emergency powers in the Constitution. They could have put them in there.
Yeah.
What they were concerned about, they'd just gotten rid of King George III, and I don't think today we ought to be, in a rush to establish King George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people already refer to him as King. Dr. Corsi, in the first hour, you mentioned that you may go ahead and run as the presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. But what do you think about a running mate, maybe Ron Paul?
Well, if Ron Paul would come over and leave the Republican Party, I'm sure the Constitution Party would embrace him and would be, delighted to have looked at him in any number of capacities. I mean, I'm sure even before the Constitution Party was talking to me about being, and I've been talked to for a long time, but by the Constitution Party, going back over a year, but it got serious with the National Veterans Coalition talking to me about supporting me. That's the largest coalition within the Constitution Party. My question about Ron Paul, and also extends to Tom Tancredo of Colorado and Duncan Hunter of California, because all three of these gentlemen have very strong positions, of which I'm largely in agreement. Will they leave the Republican Party? Because they've been Republicans so long, they're so used to it, they've gotten funding from the Republican Party. If they leave the Republican Party, the Republicans will run a candidate against them in their districts, and they'll have to fund themselves for re-election outside the Republican Party. So I don't see any enthusiasm for any of the three, including Ron Paul, to leave the Republican Party.
Hmm.
So I'm not counting on that happening.
Yeah. Well, I hope he doesn't leave until he further embarrasses them, like he did in the first couple of rounds there. Hey, I've got this question in for you, Dr. Corsi. Now, this is obviously someone who has followed many of your writings, and they acknowledge that by saying you've obviously written quite a bit about the Iran nuclear potential. But they want to know about, what about Pakistan, which already has nukes, and the instability that would result if President Musharraf is assassinated?
Well, I'm extremely concerned about Pakistan as well, and any nuclear proliferation. I mean, Pakistan and India have been at each other's throats, and every now and then a conflict flares up that could go into a nuclear conflict. And if Musharraf were assassinated, or even in normal succession, whoever the next leader is going to be, Pakistan and its stability is an open question. If Pakistan moved in a more radical direction, their current possession of nuclear weapons could be a major problem. I think throughout the region in the Middle East, in fact throughout the world, I agree with Ronald Reagan, if there were a way to move to disarm all nations, including ourselves, from nuclear weapons, I'd be in favor of it. Because the catastrophic consequences of a nuclear war continue to be unimaginable. They're horrible. And Pakistan or Iran, especially if Pakistan under radical control, is going to represent a very serious problem, not only to the Middle East, but to the world.
Mm-hmm. We have this question here, and this goes back, I think, to the first hour again, where we were talking about Sintra and buying up of U.S. highways. Of course, as I pointed out for many of the listeners who may have been tuned in late, Indiana already has leased out a major toll road that virtually goes across the state to Sintra, which is a Spanish-Australian conglomerate of some sort. But is it possible, from this question here, that these companies might sell their holdings of the United States property to the U.N.?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, they could. Also, there's a lot of backlash. I mean, I've been studying Australia, where these private public partnerships have been in place a lot longer, and have been, one of the countries and one of the areas of the world where they were developed. When these PPPs get established, so Sintra buys or leases for, 50 years, 75 years, 99 years, the Indiana Toll Road. Now, there's limitations. There's non-compete agreements that Indiana signs. They can't build or improve existing roads, which drive traffic off of the Indiana Toll Road. Sintra is expecting a rate of return. And if they don't get it, they're going to raise tolls or demand that Indiana not improve alternative routes. When you have to buy these highways back from companies like Cintra, they charge many multiples of what it costs them to build it, simply because they want to be paid for the lost earnings opportunity they were anticipating. I mean, you basically get trapped where you can face higher tolls, less desirable free transportation on alternative routes, and an ongoing political dispute with a foreign lessor who's trying to operate the highway to force revenue into their pockets based on the pro formas that the state used to sell them the deal in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think these are very, very problematic formulas. And if the Bush administration and the Federal Highway Administration end up getting, what some experts have said are $25 billion worth of these deals consummated, we could be spending the next several decades sorting out problems of bad toll road agreements.
Yep.
Where today we have largely a system that is free. I mean, they're mm-hmm. called freeways because most of our highways are not toll highways. I think it's very problematic to start moving American roads onto toll roads that are owned or operated by foreign investment consortium. I think we don't have a clue of the many, many problems we're setting ourselves up for.
Hmm. And this kind of segues into that question. This writer wants to know, do you think that Larry Silverstein will be a major investment in this highway? And I think that using the name Larry Silverstein, as you may or may not know, of course, that he was the primary investor of the three buildings that collapsed in 9/11 and made billions of dollars in insurance money. But I'm just wondering, and of course they're wondering as well, would it be a good investment for Larry Silverstein?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm aware of Larry Silverstein, and I'm aware of the arguments about his involvement in the World Trade Center and the financing and the insurance. And I realize that what your questioner is asking is whether or not there's some, you know, plan here with these foreign highways being born to, being developed and leased to foreign entities, whether some other also kind of idea that they could be terror attacked or otherwise subject to some form of violence where the owners or the operators would get undue benefits that were planned and premeditated from the beginning. I'm not concerned. I've had so many concerns before that I don't even need to get to that question. I think these are so wrongly thought out from the very beginning that we don't need to enter into that level of fear or concern in order to refute them. I think that there is a legitimate reason that public infrastructure should remain in the hands of the public and should be developed. Now, if these are such good deals for foreign investment consortium, why can't our investment bankers work to make them good deals for the states and the citizens of the states that have traditionally financed these highways?
Mm-hmm.
Or for the citizens of the United States who have financed the interstate highway system? I think we've got to retain control of our own infrastructure. It has to remain a public infrastructure, and I want to see it remain in the hands of the public, not private investment interests.
Interesting.
And I don't think I have to get to the issue of the Larry Silverstein question in order to be opposed to them.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have this kind of a statement/question. Do we really want an American leader that I have read, didn't do so well in college, deciding what America needs in an emergency? I believe with guns and Bibles, we can protect ourselves. And I guess they're alluding to maybe possibly George Bush's collegiate record there. Is he the best brain trust that we can have to run this country? Who do you think would be the best person, besides yourself, of course, in the Constitution Party, to run this country?
Well, first of all, I think that question's aimed, again, to the writing I've done about this new national security and homeland security directives. Just take a look at my articles in WorldNet Daily in the last week. Search my name, Corsi, C-O-R-S-I, on Google. You should find it together with National Security Directive. I think it was National Security Directive 51 and Homeland Security Directive 20. They're on the government website. And this is where President Bush is defining for himself these new emergency powers, which I think is a terrible idea and almost dictatorial in its whole concept. I think we should have continuity planning, that the various departments ought to be responsible for their own constitutional form of continuity planning. If their heads or departments get killed and they national tragedy of one kind or another. That's normal continuity planning. But we should limit the continuity planning into constitutional bounds, where the Congress also is a countervailing influence on these declarations of emergency, and limit the executive power that can be assumed in an emergency. I think the best solution to who should hold power in the United States is not a person, or I think the Constitution forms the best solution. I think the Constitution didn't trust anybody. Certainly didn't trust a strong executive. The Constitution says we're best safe when we've got strong, countervailing balance of power in an executive, a legislature, and a judiciary. And I want to see all three be strong and not necessarily under the same control. I'm not dissatisfied or think there's anything wrong with the Republican president and the Democratic-controlled Congress. I'd like to see the Democratic-controlled Congress be a strong countervailing force to the president, even if it makes the president uncomfortable. That's how the Constitution was set up, and I think it's the best way to manage power.
All right. All right, Dr. Corsi, we need to go to our final break, so just stay on the line, please.
Yes, I'd be delighted to. Thank you.
All right. All right, everybody, you're listening to Dr. Jerome Corsi, and we're talking about political events of the day, the superhighway, which is bringing the... Well, maybe you're going to have some tanks roll up through there, but it's certainly going to bring goods and services, perhaps a few hundred million illegal immigrants down that road, too. This is Daniel Lott. You can hear this entire broadcast tomorrow in its entirety posted up on the Edge website. We'll be right back.
Okay, here's a new song from GW. That's me and the Carla group. I was talking on the telephone with Tony Blair. We was looking for intelligence that he would share. I need some information that they can't rebuke. He said Saddam was buying stuff to build a nuke. Well, let's roll. Everybody, let's roll. If I'm gonna play the game and score, well, then I have to launch another war. Well, making lots of money is a lot of fun. We make it by creating wars that can't be won. We'll blame it on Al-Qaeda nearly every day, but we'll never tell the sheep, or let the CIA. Well, let's roll. Let's roll. Yeah, get down, Jenny. Well, gonna play the game and score, and now I have to build another war.
Take a journey to mysterious Ireland with Mysterious World Ireland. Relive the ancient past through the eyes of the Celts as they invaded the Sacred Isle in search of their destinies. Learn about the supernatural exploits of St. Patrick as he turned the world of ancient Ireland upside down. You can use Mysterious World Ireland to visit Ireland either on your next vacation or from the comfort of your own home. Available at Amazon.com or through a bookstore near you. Or call 1-800-247-6553. That's 1-800-247-6553. Or visit ireland.mysteriousworld.com. Do you feel like I do? Are you getting a feeling the Edge radio broadcast is growing? Well, if so, you're right. The Edge program has been hitting the bullseye of what people are interested in. Do you feel like I do? We're now broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from the new EBN, the Edge Broadcasting Network. We've added a web store. We're making a difference in the search for truth, and we're sharing our success with you. Do you feel like I do? From around the world, people are listening. They're sending in their stories and comments. They're making guest suggestions. They're telling their friends about the show. Do you feel like I do? Listen every Saturday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and feel like I do, right here on this station.
Tune in, buckle up, and get ready for a ride on the Edge Radio broadcast. Your mission commander, Daniel Lott.
Welcome back to the Edge program. Hey, if you have a question for our guest, Dr. Jerome Corsi, you better get it in now. And don't forget, there are various book links to Dr. Corsi there on his in his bio section there on the Edge website. Don't forget, you can click on the trailer we have for him. And I don't I gotta talk to Andy, because when I'm looking at his trailer, every once in a while I see John Kerry's face. Can that face be any longer than human? Then that's not even human. It must be a stressed android face. John Kerry, I don't know what happened to him back in Nam though, but I think the North Vietnamese got to him, stressed his face. I'm sorry, that's crazy talk there. But anyway, hey, don't forget next week we're gonna bring with you, bring it to you, Robert Baird. And, yes, we will be having Dr. Bartlett in, looks like back in July. And if you'd like to hear one of our previous guests, you know, you can suggest previous guests. We have, of course, most of our guests are new, but we'd like to bring some of the old ones back to give us updates to questions and different things they've talked about on the program. And you can also take a poll question there on the Edge's website. You can join the forum. You can sign up for the newsletter. It's all free. There's no toll gate here on the Edge program. Speaking of toll roads, maybe we can establish a toll road some way. We get the we can get Sintra, the conglomerate over there in Spain. Maybe we can get them to establish a toll for you to pay for these programs. What do you think? I bet you don't like that, do you? That wouldn't be the Edge if we charged you. But hey, but maybe we can slide that in on you. We'll just farm it out, man. They do such a good job buying up American U.S. highways and who knows how many businesses. All right, let's go back to our newsmaker line. Dr. Corsi, welcome back.
Thank you, Daniel. Happy to. I'm very pleased to be with you. Thank you.
All right. And by the way, do you have any website links or anything that you'd like to say to give a shout out here about where they can get your book or whatever?
Well, I think my books are listed on Amazon.com. Just search my name, Corsi, C-O-R-S-I. And I write for WorldNet Daily. Doing columns now for WorldNet Daily. I had to quit being a staff reporter to pursue the possibility even of being the candidate for the Constitution Party. So WorldNetDaily.com. My columns appear regularly, and you can again search my name, Corsi, C-O-R-S-I, or Google my name. With many of the topics I write about, you'll find the articles. And lastly, I go to ConstitutionParty.com. And of that, the National Veterans Coalition is supporting me, nvets.org. They're setting up, they'll have a new website active here pretty soon, to join the Constitution Party for $20, whereas through the National Vets Coalition, whether you're a vet or not, whereas before it had been a $35 cost. So that we got instituted, and it'll be effective very quickly on the nvets.org new website, which should go active next week.
Interesting. And I'm not sure, because I may not have been paying attention, but do Constitution Party members, candidates, do they get invited to major political debates?
Well, I think, Daniel, that's going to depend on our ability to raise money and how strong a showing we can make up to the point of the debates. But if you remember, Ross Perot was in the debates with Bill Clinton and with George Bush back in 1992. And that, again, is a function of the ability to get a strong campaign going and to be able to get a place at those debates. So I'm certainly, if I am the candidate of the Constitution Party, I would certainly hope to be able to get into the debates.
Mm-hmm. Now, who's the previous candidate for president, Constitution Party?
Well, there's a couple candidates before. The candidates have not gotten any more than 1%. They've not been national figures or major candidates. I think the Constitution Party in 2008 thinks it's positioned to find a candidate who can be a national figure, and I'm very seriously considering to accept the draft motion that's being put forward by the National Veterans Coalition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to find some way that as internet users and listeners, people that have to do with this program and others, could possibly get together. Blogs, political blogs particularly, have
have forced candidates to even understand what they are, because people are communicating. And I know that some political elements have been changed as a result of internet chat or blogs posted about their positions on different things. So I'm trying to find a way that if it's that much power, maybe it could be brought together to where, say, a constitutionalist party might have much more effect on the political outcome. Because even if the candidate doesn't win, if there's enough grassroots out there, you know, it was, of course, United States wide, to get together and start talking about issues, that perhaps through that just talking about the Constitution Party, it would be enough to veer the other two parties back to normalcy in some way.
Well, I'm not sure that either the Democratic or Republican Party are salvageable. I mean, I think they're both increasingly like each other, both increasingly under the influence of the multinational corporations and their dollars for campaign funding and candidate funding. And I think they're both Republicans and Democrats working for globalist objectives.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, though, that we can impact the political debate. The Constitutional Party, I think, will and has. I know the writings I've done so far have made an impact, and that's largely been through the work of other bloggers and people on the Internet. It's been through the work of talk radio, good shows like yours. And I think we can continue to make impacts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's conceivable to me that a Constitution Party candidate for president in 2008 might even win.
There you go.
We should rule it out.
I don't think we should rule that out either. I certainly always believe the glass is always half full. And by the way, I don't know if you know, you've heard of Murphy's Law, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, do you know he has a brother?
What's that?
No, really. Yeah, he's got.
Who's the brother?
Well, I really don't know his name, but he's out there. But anyway, his brother believes that anything that can go right will. Now, that's the one. That's the one I subscribe to. You know what I'm saying?
I like that. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. All right, we have this question here, and I think this is in regard to your previous mention that you're affiliated, or I don't know if practicing Roman Catholic, is that a word? But the question is, can you uphold the separation of church and state clause in the First Amendment, or are you inclined to obey the Pope?
Well, you know, these questions have come up ever since Jack Kennedy ran for president, and they were about the same answer that Jack Kennedy gave, and the Pope, on matters of faith for, you know, the future of my soul and what I believe, I think the Pope has authority. When it comes to questions of American political policy and power and politics, I don't think the Pope is the authority. The authority is the American people. And I don't see following the Pope on any issue that would have to do with the decision the President would make. As to regards to the First Amendment was really enacted to protect the church, all churches, from the state, not to protect the state from the church, and to have freedom of religion, something that people could practice. But to me, freedom of religion has to do with salvation, and is something that an individual will look to God for their own salvation, but is not a matter of deciding public policy, which I think is more dictated by the American people.
Mm-hmm. We have this question here. It's in regards to presidents, as this writer refers to as New World Order presidents. Basically, they're suggesting that they're letting the country be slowly taken over so that patriots will let their guard down. And I think you and I talked about in the first hour the kind of the frog in the, you know, in the boiling water,
right,
you know, incrementalism. There are patriots around the country, and but I would think that if somebody from the 18th century came into today's century, regardless of the technology differentiation, they would be astounded at the lack of freedom that we have. We don't even know how much freedom we lost or don't have.
Well, I think we've got to, that's one of the reasons why I do think the Constitution Party merits attention of people, because if we go back to the original definitions of our freedom, we've got in the American Constitution a set of principles and, you know, countervailing balances where we have a limited republic, of, you know, balanced government where none of the parties, where none of the three branches of government can be operate unchecked by the other two. We have had an erosion of our freedoms, and it continues to be a threat. I mean, I've been very concerned, for instance, about these hate laws that are being passed. You know, under the name of tolerance, people are really passing a hate agenda in which you can't even object to certain subjects without committing a crime. Well, I think that's completely counter to the spirit of the First Amendment. The First Amendment was meant to be robust, active discussion with one another, disagreement, and unless you're doing something like imminently calling for a revolution with a reasonable prospect it could happen, yes, you can abuse your free speech rights, but they're very robust in definition. And that's the case with all of our rights. And I think, you know, under threats of various kinds, very tempting for people to give up rights. I'm very concerned about the Patriot Act. I think the Patriot Act is an excessive definition of government intrusion into our lives, which dramatically reduces and limits our freedoms. I'm concerned about the Real ID and all of these other identification technologies the government's introducing. I don't think we need to have a George Orwell or an Aldous Huxley definition of big, you know, the father figure being the head of the state. I'm trusting the people with their own freedoms will run their lives responsibly.
Mm-hmm. But do you agree, though, that if somebody were to look at the way Americans think and behave, we've already been modified so much. How do we know that even our minuscule objections are just the result of the dumbing down or the reinventing of the American psyche?
Well, I agree that's a legitimate concern. And I agree with why radio shows like yours, Daniel, is why I'm happy and proud to be with you and honored to be with you. That's why I think we've got to keep fighting to get this word out. I think the best thing we can do in American politics is to have robust disagreement with each other. Fight these issues out. As long as we do it civilly, I think the idea that we oppose each other and question these issues, like I've questioned, you know, these national security directives, we've got to put these agendas on for discussion. How much power do we want the president to have in a national emergency? Let's talk about it, debate it out. If we don't do that, we're going to lose more freedoms. And mm-hmm. the presidents are always happy to come by and say, look, this is a security and prosperity partnership in North America. How can you object? It's for your security and your prosperity. Well, as soon as I hear that, I want to say, well, I'm not so sure I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's legitimate.
Mm-hmm. In this recent immigration law that they're trying to get through, am I understanding that right? Do they actually expect millions of people to go back to Mexico, then get in line to come back into this country?
Well, I've read that that's one of the provisions, and I think that's particularly ridiculous. Added on to, they expect that people are going to pay a fine in order to deport themselves and then come on back in and reapply. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous law. I think this, everything I've heard about this most current Kyle Kennedy compromise kind of convinces me that it's the worst of all possible compromises, and it's certain to fail both from the left and from the right.
What kind of law would you, well, of course, you said earlier you want to see the laws on the books enforced, but...
Yeah, I don't think we need a new law, Daniel. Why do we need a new law? Let's enforce the laws we have.
But that is an obvious statement, and it hasn't been done.
That's right. We just passed the law in November to build a fence. Congress signed it. Was that just a public relations effort because we're going into an election and, you know, the president wanted to kind of say, well, look, I'm for border security. And as soon as we get out of the election, Michael Chertoff comes on and says that, well, you know, I'm headed to Homeland Security. We don't need a fence. We can have a virtual fence. Well, that's a virtual, ridiculous answer. Let's enforce laws, build a fence. Let's go back and enforce the other laws we have. Let's punish employers who hire mm-hmm. illegals. Let's
yeah.
make sure the taxes are paid from the legal immigrants who are working. Let's mm-hmm. make sure we don't let employers hire people off the books.
Mm-hmm.
We enforce the laws we have, I think we can solve this problem.
It doesn't really seem, though, that you can enforce the laws on the books. I know there's various cities around the country that are trying to make it illegal for landlords to rent illegal immigrants, and the government and every organization imaginable filing lawsuits ad nauseum for who knows how many miles of legal arguments there will be. It doesn't seem that there's ever going to be a law that's going to, and you would think that's just the basic thing. Why are they allowed already to rent places to illegal immigrants? How can that happen now? And so you talk about enforcing the laws in the books. Well, they're not being enforced. And if you try to enforce them, there's a lawsuit to stop you from enforcing the laws on the books. It's insane.
Well, I think we've got to fight that. We've got to get Department of Justice who's oriented toward contesting the sanctuary cities, the sanctuary definitions, the definitions that we're not going to enforce our laws in particular towns. That should be the mission of the Justice Department, and we should go out and fight those municipalities that think they can go their own way. The federal government can enforce the laws that we have if the federal government has a will to do so. The problem is that President Bush, with the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America, has been into more of a merging of the U.S. with Canada and Mexico, mm-hmm. and has no resolve to secure that border whatsoever, and has not since he took office in 2001.
Right. Why can't people force the government to enforce the laws?
Well, we should be able to.
But we can't. You know that's true.
Well, I know because I think that's part of the problem we've got with both Democrats and Republicans. They're not listening to the people, and especially in immigration, politicians are doing the bidding of the people, the multinational corporations who pay them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strictly a matter of money. They're going along with this globalist agenda, and they're, paying lip service to the American public on the issue of securing the borders. I think we've got to stop that, and we've got to fight that. I think we've got to demand that our government enforce the laws that we have.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they don't enforce the laws on the books, isn't it up to the American people to throw off such government?
Well, I think at least to throw out the people in the Congress and the presidency who aren't doing what the American people want done. I'm reluctant to say we've got to have a revolution or change our form of government. I don't think that's the case. I think our Constitution does define the best government that's been ever defined in the history of the world to create economic activity and to preserve our individual freedoms. We've got to go back to the roots of that and demand that the Constitution be respected mm-hmm. the way it was written and that we get back into place a government who's not doing the bidding of the multinational corporations who pay them, but the American people, regardless of whether they're rich or poor.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Corsi, in the first hour, one of our astute listeners suggested that possibly persuading Ron Paul to come over to be your running mate as presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. But now in this hour, somebody suggests that perhaps you should make a communication to Alex Jones. What do you think about that? He has a huge internet base, doesn't he?
Well, I've been on Alex Jones' show many times, and I have great respect for Alex. I don't know if Alex has any political aspirations. I don't know how the Constitution Party members would feel about mm-hmm. Alex mm-hmm. running, but I do want to say I enjoy being on Alex's show, yeah. and I support his determined effort to inquire into these topics, and I admire mm-hmm. the tenacity with which he does so.
Would you think, though, that his consistent declarations and programming regarding conspiracies around 9/11 discredits him to even be considered for a political office?
Well, possibly, but that's not, I don't think that's Alex's driving motivation. I think Alex wants to get to the truth on these issues, and whether I agree with him 100% or not, which I do not do, I'm still happy to be with him because I think he fights so hard for free discourse and he's bold and brave in the issues he believes in. I admire it whether I agree 100% with him or not, and I'm glad he has the opportunity. I'd fight for his opportunity to stay on the air and to be able to keep pursuing mm-hmm. these issues the way he wants to pursue them.
All right. Well, we've been suggesting them. What about your own suggestion? Who do you see as a possible running mate?
Well, I'm not sure. I haven't gotten that far yet. First, I've got to decide if I want to make the run, and then I think my second issue would be go to the Constitution Party and see who suggested, especially the National Veterans Coalition that's drafting me, see who among the National Veterans Coalition might be a good candidate. I've never had military experience. I'm not a veteran. In World War II, I wasn't even born. In Vietnam, when I went for my draft physical, they decided that I've had eczema since I was a child, very bad eczema, especially when I was younger, and they decided that disqualified me. And so I've never been in the military. But despite that, I'm honored that the National Veterans Coalition is drafting me, and I've been a strong supporter of the military. In those years, I went, I was at Harvard, I did, and before I did an awful lot of research on political violence, terrorism. I had a national security clearance in the early 80s, arranged through the State Department by the Agency for International Development. So I've done a lot of work for the federal government, always through universities, or otherwise, never as an employee of the government. And I'm honored to be considered by the National Veterans Coalition to be their candidate.
On the, I believe it was on the WorldNet Daily, you wrote an article talking about Bush okays integration with the European Union. What's the downside with more integration with our Democratic friends over there in Europe?
Well, I again think that that was over an April 30th, 2007 agreement that Bush signed without consultation with Congress, where we created a transatlantic economic council as a cabinet level office in the U.S. government, resolved ourselves in some 40 policy issues that we're going to integrate and harmonize now with Europe. I think all these redefinitions of our administrative laws and regulations to comply with other nations or regional, governments like the European Union are a mistake. We don't need to be integrating and harmonizing our laws. Let's have our laws be our laws. And these economic unions have a tendency to merge and evolve through this incremental stealth process of becoming political entities. I'm very concerned every time I hear that we're integrating with anyone. I think it's a mistake.
Well, again, that seems to me that goes back to the early fathers, where they said to abstain from entangling.
I agree with that. George Washington, in his farewell address, said, avoid entangling foreign alliances and involvements.
If you are going to run as a candidate for the Constitutionalist Party, don't you think you need to be moving on that rather quickly? I mean, there's a lot of places you'd have to go, isn't there?
Well, it's a step-by-step process. I think I'll have to take several months to travel to get to know the Constitution Party, make sure the existing Constitution Party members are comfortable with who I am and get a chance to meet me across the country, explore to make sure it's a viable and reasonable thing to do, and that we're all still in accordance.
Okay.
Pursuing the objective after that happens.
Well, Dr. Corsi, for our listening audience's sake and even for mine, what are the major tenets of the Constitutionalist Party?
Well, the Constitution Party, I've identified about six different issues that I think are critical here for a campaign to run on. And I think they involve, for instance, making sure that we secure our borders. I think that's critical and number one. We've got to make sure we build a fence and get it in place. We've got to make sure that we enforce our immigration laws, make sure that they are respected. I want to make sure that we cut off the social benefits for illegal immigrants that are here getting benefits that shouldn't get those benefits. I think that's a mandatory thing to do. I've been very concerned about Iraq. I want to make sure that we build a strong military on the Reagan style and find a way to... I think we won that engagement from what the Army was designed to do. We had a quick strike military that toppled Saddam Hussein as it was asked to do, and subsequently is now involved in nation building, which George Bush assured us we would never do. And I think I'm very concerned about taxation issues. I think that we've got to take a look at the Federal Reserve System. We've got to eliminate what I think is unconstitutional income tax and get back to a system of constitutional taxation, which is very limited, and make sure that we put that in place. So I'm opposed to continuing the income tax, and I want to look for other alternatives that are more in accordance with the Constitution.
Well,
those types of issues I think are very important, and those are going to end up being the kinds of platform issues I'm going to be comfortable to see boiled down to be primary focuses for the Constitution Party to run on.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, I think a lot of people are frustrated with the immigration mess the way it is, and they really, you know, it's almost like selective law enforcement, and they've selected not to enforce that law. And I say, well, then a lot of us who are obeying the laws ought to pick and choose our own laws.
Well, that's right.
You know,
I agree with that. We've got to enforce the immigration laws that we have, and we don't need new laws until we enforce the ones we've got.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand it's a national pastime in Israel to not obey any law that's written. You know, maybe that's.
So. I'm not in favor of getting to that position here in the United States.
Yeah, you are not in favor of anarchy, as you said.
No, I'm not in favor of anarchy.
Yeah.
I'm in favor of the Constitution. I think the Constitution has good definitions and structures that we ought to respect and obey and follow those because I think it's a good structure to preserve our freedom.
Yeah, but the preamble does say, though, that, you know, if the government gets out of hand, it is our duty to throw off this government.
I understand.
So you knew where I got that from.
Yes, I do know where you got
So it's
that
in
from.
There. So, yeah, I know you're not going to be saying that on this program, but I can say
that. I'm not going to call for it today, but I'm well aware of where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what can we look forward from you in the future, Dr. Corsi? What are you involved with right now? What are you working on?
Well, Daniel, the major things I'm working on right now are I'm very concerned about this definition of emergency powers that George Bush has declared for himself in these new National Security and Homeland Security Directives. And I'm going to be following up on that in the next little bit. I'm very concerned with the Security and Prosperity Partnership and the merging of the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And I don't want to see that get us into a European-style North American community or North American Union. I don't want to see us move towards a unified North American currency like the Amero. So these are issues I'm going to be working on in addition to illegal immigration. I need to build a fence. I want to make sure that these issues are brought into respecting the laws that we have and getting this illegal immigration under control.
Yeah. But of course, now, if any of these things happens, for instance, that gigantic highway coming up through here or convergence of the monetary systems to the Amero, all that for patriotic Americans across the country, including the veterans, that could bode very well for the Constitution Party, so you really can't lose on that.
Well, I would still rather that they didn't happen than to have them happen and get in office in order to fight them. I prefer, you know, I had not planned my life that I was going to be running for President of the United States. I'm honored to be considered and asked to do it and feel that these issues are compelling. I'm honored to be thought that I could play a role in them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be happy to live out my life as a private citizen. If these problems were not developing in such a way that I think they're emerging into a real risk to the U.S. sovereignty.
Well, you are obviously very knowledgeable on these issues, Dr. Corsi, and it just seems to me that perhaps you should strongly consider taking up that mantle of the Constitution Party only because you want what's right and you are eloquent in your delivering of that information, and obviously you're very passionate about it, and it could benefit a lot of people. So I'm kind of suggesting you just go ahead. So, Dr. Corsi, we're at the end of this broadcast. Anything you'd like to say in the final minute?
I'm honored to be with you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your listeners, and I'd be happy to be with you anytime you ask.
Very good. We'll have you on the program again, especially if you make that announcement. We'll definitely want to have you back.
Thank you, sir.
All right, sir. Good evening.
You have been listening to The Edge with Daniel Ott. To subscribe to The Edge newsletter, log on to TheEdgeAM.com. That's TheEdgeAM.com, where you can find out more about the guests and topics discussed on the air. The Edge is being brought to you by Internet Solutions, home of affordable website design and low-cost Internet access. Visit Internet Solutions at es4.com. That's es4.com. Until next week, for the Edge Radio broadcast, I'm Chris Moore. See you on the Edge.
News on the USA Radio Network is next.